you can get two sorts of ponds. We put in a little concrete stock pond, which is about $140 or $40 or something. $40 I was paying for. Little concrete stock ponds. Or we... I'll try and draw this so you understand it. That's a tractor tire cut through. We've been cutting the walls out of them with a Stanley knife, quite easy, the nylon ones. Drop that wall out, throw that away. Make a hole that shape in the sand. Line that with plastic. That needed another colour. Drop that bit of the tyre in, which is the wall of the tyre, the tread, and the bottom thing, bottom rim. Fill it up with good soil up to there. So that's all good soil. And then fill it with water. And that's been, we've made a lot of those in Aboriginal settlements. So it's just cheap, cheap pond. And it holds 400 gallons of water. So it's quite a lot of pond. Oh, tractor tyre, biggest one we can roll. Some of them are four-man tyres to stand them up. But the ordinary tractor tyre would be, I suppose, 4 feet diameter. And these work fine. And then we lay flat rock right out to there. So they look nice. Don't see any tyre after that. And you can put a large plant here like a lotus. And, a considerable number of water chestnuts in. So they've got some little production. But for these small ponds in your garden, there's three or four plants to grow. The thing is, almost fill the pond with soil and grow Chinese water chestnut, which are on the market in Sydney now, so you can buy all your nuts. Water chestnuts, which are little rushes and give you quite a good yield out of the pond. And they have chestnuts about that big as roots. They're actually and they have little chestnuts all over runners on the roots. Or taro. And we're starting to grow more taro. That's a pond almost full of earth. And you can get about 12 taro in a 4 foot pond and pick a good taro. There's some good taros in Australia now. And if you're willing to wait 18 months, you can get about 30 pounds weight of root from each taro. So 12, and you can dig them when you like at 9 months, 18 months, 2 years, 2.5 years. They just get bigger. So they're a high yield of a staple if you like taro, and a lot of people like it a lot. In water, just that much water over the soil. 4 inches of water. Actually, in very wet soil they do fine. They don't need the pond, but it stops soakage away. And the other thing which you might just sneak in is a tiny little pond with either watercress or kangkong. And those ponds only need to be a couple of feet across because you can't eat all the watercress out of a 2 foot pond. Kangkong or watercress. So these are the uses of small garden ponds for each case. Very high production in a small area. So I've got a couple of those in my garden. I keep frogs in them too. My cauliflowers and cabbages all have about 6 frogs each in the base of the leaves. And they do most of the job I want on those little green grubs. But you can get an awful lot of frogs out of a few little ponds. Those little Hyla Ewing eyes is a good frog to get. So they are a nice touch in your garden. And then if you're up to 1/4 acre, then you can put a small chicken shed with 2 runs either side at the back You only need nine good chooks for your family. And I'm going to build a pigeon loft next time I go somewhere. I used to keep pigeons when I was young and race them. And I've been rereading on pigeons, and we've sadly neglected the potential of the pigeon in the backyard. Because you let them fly, and they forage elsewhere. And in West Australia, if anywhere near the wheat fields, they just forage on the spilt wheat, you know. And they're high quality manure. That's from a pigeon loft. You get all the fertiliser you ever need for your whole garden. So that's one of the beauties of them. And if you're near the beaches, they fly down the beaches and get a lot of food on the beaches. Noticed a lot of the homers spend a lot of time down on the beach. I think probably they get grit there, and they like to have grit and mineral grit. And they're kind of a forgotten resource. Used to be our fertiliser farms once, before we got superphosphate. You had to keep them to get enough phosphate for your garden.
What sort of ponds are they?
Little concrete stock troughs. You buy them. Hume sent them to put them out. They've got a little guy and they got a big guy. And they bring them on a truck and lower them where you want them. You can actually pick them up and roll them, two or three of you, but they're heavy. Or this tyre one, which is cheaper. And you can make out of truck tyres or tractor tyres, as long as they've got nylon in them, not steel radials. The Stanley knife turns its nose up at steel radial. Actually, I have cut a steel radial out with using three blades on a Stanley knife. Amazingly, you cut through the steel. Yeah. Have you done that? Yeah, I did it with a Stanley knife. Yeah, I was amazed that you could do that. I think it's because it's held by the rubber and can't get away from your knife or something. Right. Well, it doesn't much matter. These guys are very shade tolerant. And these are not. These like to be in sunlight. Watercress is fairly shade tolerant. Kangkong's not. And lotuses are sun, like the sun, open sun. They fade out with partial shade. The root and the seed. The seeds are numerous. They're in quite a large capsule, that shape. And looking down on that capsule, which is not quite that big, the seeds are in little pockets all the way around it, in two rows, I think. And you just shake them out and pop them like popcorn. So they're handy like that. No husking and grinding. Just the lotus. It's only one lotus. There's an Australian blue lotus, right, which you can examine. See, I think the Aborigines used it. And then the root is very large. The lotus root's about that big. And that in section looks like that. So that pattern is repeated through the plant. And these are holes through the root. And you cut it in sections and stir-fry it. And you buy it in cans. And you must have seen it in your stir-fry in your Chinese shop. Haven't you, these lotus roots? You can buy them in cans. But these are your staples. Is your taro, and your kangkong, watercress. Water chestnut, you can take them or leave them alone. You dig them in April and May, just before the winter, and just immediately replant two or three, you know, a dozen, and they spread right across the pond, and then you dig them in the following April. They're very saleable, by the way. Very expensive. They just like a good mucky pond with a very little water over it. You could put some fish in this one, and you can use little mosquito fish or goldfish. Mountain cloud minnows, not really. They're not big enough. These are all tiny ponds, and they're really not going to produce you any great weight of animal food. But they produce you a lot of weight of vegetable food. Well, you put a good soil in, and then algae forms sometimes in the water, and that's quite a high nitrogen provision. I always put a handful of a zola in, which is a nitrogen fixing water fern. You know that little guy that turns sort of red on top of the ponds? You've seen ponds cover a red colour? That's a zola in one of its phases. It disappears in the hot weather, but it reappears again in the autumn, right through winter and spring. It's a little tiny fern, the little jagged leaf, has a little root, it floats about on the pond. In the ends of each of these little leaflet things, it's got a little gelatin pocket, and in the gelatin pocket lives a blue-green algae whose name I've forgotten. And it fixes nitrogen. Yes. In fact, you can run taro beds without much nutrient input, providing you have an annual crop of azolla. It's basically like the clover of the water. And they do that in Hawaii on a large scale. And the azolla comes down. When it's coming down, there's a mat of it that thick, and it's all rich in nitrogen. The other thing about azolla, I used to feed my ducks bucketfuls of it. You can't let the ducks near the azolla. And I also mulched all my pond edge plants with it, and I mean tons of it. When the wind blows on one of my ponds, the azolla will pile up that deep. And you can lift hundredweights of it out and just put it round your... I used to put it round the pond, the ponds round edge plants. I grew fantastic globe artichokes with azolla mulches. So I used to lift, you know, whatever I could stand to. I'd work away and put, you know, probably a couple, 200 or 300 weight on at a time. It's quite a rich manure. But there's absolutely no problem, you know, give them a dash of liquid seaweed or something like that in the ponds. In 3 days, the plants have got all that nutrient. Crumble a little bit of dry chicken manure in or something when you think of it, that's all. That sort of thing, that's all they want. Mostly water plants, in it, like watercress, you can cut it forever out of the pond. Most I've ever given it's a bit of seaweed fertiliser. Right. So they're additions you can put in if your garden is a little bigger than just plain food provision. There's ponds, livestock, that's about it. And I don't think you can run many commercial situations in your backyard. Yeah. I was amazed at how many plants... who was it used to... the old president of the Permaculture Association, Ray. Ray and Roz. Yeah, well, boy, they turned some plants out of that backyard. They sent hundreds or thousands of trees out of there. So, you know, you can make quite a contribution towards large nursery plantings from a small backyard. There's another girl who did the course, she lived down here, and she made a tiny little permaculture backyard. Did you ever see it? With islands and lakes and streams in it. It was a beauty. It's just like a very small giant farm, you know. It had lakes with islands, that little stream coming through and back, and had the grassy banks. The whole thing was sort of about that big. Yeah, it was quite a remarkable backyard. It's just out here somewhere, out in this town. I don't know where she is now. She's in Sydney. But they tell me that place is still there that she made. Do you know who she was? Kirsten's backyard. Did you ever see it? Oh, remarkable. Did you ever see... It was remarkable, wasn't it? Yeah. You felt as though you're in this... You could sort of half close your eyes and you're in a 100-acre landscape, you know. It had little lakes and little streams, and it had duck coming down the stream sometimes, and it had some ducks in there. Yeah, it was like a bird's eye view of a large farm. It had a lot of food in it, but it would have a little peninsula of miniature strawberries, you know, those tiny little guys. It was really strange, wasn't it? It was a remarkable, it's like a whole miniature system. I liked it actually a lot. I'd never seen anything, I never have since seen anything quite like it. I knew another friend of mine put a key line in Canberra, a key line in the backyard that was steep, like up to there. He had a whole sequence of, he even had little irrigation shutters in the system so he could lift these little irrigation slides, water spreader systems this long, and fields about 10 feet long. he key lined the whole backyard. It was very strange. And it actually functioned very well. So, you can have a small farm there. It was, and another mate of mine even had, he used to take it round, he had one on the back of a truck, and he used to take it round to shows and that. And he had, instead of chooks, he'd have chickens. Instead of ducks, he had ducklings. And he had the whole thing growing with its house, lake, everything on the back of this truck. So, people who haven't got much to do can build some really interesting miniature whole systems. One is a cow about 4 inches high.